Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Tom Augenthaler. Tom is on a mission to apply the influencer marketing model that we've all become familiar with on the B2C side of our lives into the B2B company sphere. He helps B2B SaaS companies build brand affinity and nurture demand by engaging influencers who can impact the decision-making of their buyers. Now, this requires him to understand the marketing needs of companies, identify influencers that are suited to their target customers, and then bring everyone together into one consolidated program. So, hi, Tom. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Kelly. I am honored to be here with you today.
So, given that the vast majority of our listeners here on the Sourcing Hero podcast are definitely in B2B, I would also say that the majority are either procurement and sourcing professionals or on the supply side of things. Can you just take a minute before we start to talk a little bit more about your background, maybe something about your day-to-day, so that people have a more detailed sense from you what somebody that focuses on B2B influence building does?
Sure. I started my influence marketing career when I was still working for HP. And at the time, I was part of their PR department. And there, I handled consumer laptops on a worldwide level. So I was always looking for new and different ways in which to reach our prospective buyers, our ideal audiences, our ideal customers, and figure out ways in which to get in front of them so I could get my product in front of them rather than the competitors doing so. And it's while at HP that I stumbled into working with bloggers, as we called them back then. We didn't even use the word influencer. And from there, I started working with the bloggers and then building programs once I started to get to know some of them. And that's how it started.
Interesting. Now it's funny that you talk about, you know, it used to be bloggers for all you kids listening. This was before podcasts were cool. We all used to just, you know, blog to share our thoughts. There was no social media also. We'll take your sympathy in the comments. But it's possible to be out there and to have a voice, be using your voice, but not necessarily be achieving anything with that. So if we try to think about what makes an influencer influential? How can you be effective as an influencer?
That's a great question. And I think the short answer that most people would give you is, well, just look at the size of the person's social audience. The more followers you have on Instagram, the better, right? Or TikTok or wherever it happens to be. But really, the size of the audience is only one part of it. It's really more about what are you talking about, who are you trying to talk to, and how are you talking to them? And if, you know, many people can do that, as you just mentioned, through blogging, right? That's where most of the influencers that yes. I have known for a long time all started. They started with blogs. And that's a long form version of content, right? Because it's written and there's paragraphs and you have to sort of structure your thinking, right? In written form.
Spell stuff right.
Spell stuff right, hopefully. maybe sprinkle in a few images here or there and you tell a story. And I think that's one of the things I look for in influencers is how well are they telling the story within the space in which they operate. So that's what I look at. It's not really so much the size of the following, although that can matter at times. But really, it's more about who are they talking to, how are they talking to them, and are they able to do it in a way that's resonating with the audience?
Yeah. And I think, and you know, it's interesting because we talk about, you've talked about following, you've talked about audience. In most of these cases, influencers are trying to reach and connect with people that are definitely not face to face with them, right? This is in order to achieve the scale that you really need to be an effective influencer, you have to be effective in a virtual setting. And I think that probably a huge part of what factors into that is this idea of authenticity, right? So how you project, like you said, what you're saying it about, who you're trying to reach with that message. I would personally rather follow someone that I feel is real or that I feel is authentic, but that I don't agree with, than somebody that I'm kind of, do they really mean what they say? Do they really believe what they're trying to convince me of? How do you talk to either the companies that you're working with around influencer marketing or even the influencers that you talk to directly around how important authenticity is in the whole influencer approach?
Yeah. Authenticity is one of those words in the space that gets overused. And after a while, it starts to lose its meaning, right? Because you can actually fake some authenticity. And I've seen people give seminars on how to do it, believe it or not.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to the B2B world, it's very hard to fake authenticity, I think, if you're going to position yourself as some kind of an expert. And the reason I say that is that in the B2B world, most of the influencers that I work with have some background in what they're talking about. So for instance, you know, procurement and supply chain. If you don't know the procurement supply chain world, anybody that operates there and is reading your content or watching your videos or listening to your podcast is going to pick up pretty quickly that this person doesn't have a lot of depth in the space, right? So in that sense, that's why I like doing B2B influencer marketing, because the people are experts. They've been in the space for a while. They've got direct experience, and that authenticity shines through in the content that they produce. That's not to say that there aren't some posers or wannabes.
Sure.
But you're able to parse through those people pretty quickly just by looking at the content, spending a little time on it, and you can also see what kind of resonance they're getting with their audience.
Now, one of the things that will be interesting to see is how this whole idea, especially in the B2B space of influencer marketing, evolves, because it's relatively new, right? And so most of the people that are currently tagged by others as influencers, you know, did not set out to become influencers. It happened as sort of a natural byproduct of something else that they were doing or the culmination of their professional experience. They sort of found themselves in this role with a following and a voice and an opinion and a willingness to share it. But now that it does exist, I think there's probably more and more people that are actively trying to get themselves into that space. Can you provide us with either advice or examples that you've seen for someone that's on the journey to want to be an influencer? Is there something they get sidetracked on? Like, do people get too wrapped up in metrics, or do people have a tendency to think, well, I have to talk all the time, even if I don't have a really good opinion? What are some of the little traps that people fall into when they're purposefully pursuing this idea of becoming a B2B influencer?
Another good question. From my observations and what I've been able to discern through talking to people through the years and listening to them, many of the influencers I know, one of the first traps that you can get caught up in is the vanity metric trap. So what I mean by that is starting to care about how many likes your post got, or how many comments you got, or how many, you know, whatever it is, whatever the vanity metric is on whatever social platform it is. Those social platforms are all designed and structured to make that your primary activity.
Right.
So, you know, that's the way they want you to measure things. And they create this sort of sense of missing out if you're not getting as many likes as, you know, somebody over there is. That's not the metric that really matters to someone like me. I look for, again, I look for expertise, and I look for someone who's developing thoughtful content that actually helps their audience. So instead of, you know, quirky little videos that are cute and funny, mm-hmm. or, you know, generic posts about, you know, how's your day going, or, you know, keep an open mind, you know, a positive mindset or something. Yeah. Instead of that garbage, you know, I'm looking to see what, you know, how are they helping the actual person who operates in the space? And that could be just through advice. It could be through sharing experiences that they've had in the past or they've had, you know, they're having now, and how to work through those situations. That's what I really look for. Now, that's the first thing that people get tripped on, the vanity metrics. So don't let that get, don't let that be your primary measure in terms of your influence. The other one I think that people can get caught up in is, well, I'm not getting enough contact by brands. I'm not getting enough contact by other individuals in this space. Well, that's something that comes with time.
Yeah.
And the way to measure that is to measure your consistency. So are you posting on a regular basis so that the audience you're building can expect to hear from you? So maybe it's posting once a week. Maybe it's posting three times a week. If you're working a full-time job, don't feel pressure to post every day. That's ridiculous. Mm. Post once a week. Post something that is doable for you, so that you're going to be able to produce something that's actually valuable to the audience in which you're speaking to. It takes a while to attract your audience. There are shortcuts to doing it, but I don't recommend you think that way. I recommend you think in terms of a long-term goal and just being consistent over the course of time. That's how the best influencers have done it, by the way.
Yeah, and it is hard to be patient. Right. It's hard, but I mean, I think the interesting thing is we can't stress enough that in the B2B space, it's not the same as, you know, don't I look fabulous the way I've applied this makeup? Okay, now go buy this makeup. If there does have to be an underpinning of expertise, it takes time to build up the expertise. And then it takes time to get people to know about it. And the other thing that I'm interested in getting your thoughts about, so we're talking about influencers sort of in the industry-wide or business-wide context. But the word influence itself is also something that's been used a lot more inside of companies. Are you building influence? Do you have influence? Or even in a very similar vein, who is an influencer that I should try to work with to help build support for my program or project or get a message out? Is there anything that we can learn from about the larger B2B influencer marketing approach that people who are working inside of companies can apply? So for instance, how would you characterize someone that's effective internal influencer inside of a business versus somebody that's trying to have reach externally?
Okay, that's an interesting question. There are ways, it all depends again on how you look at it. So when we talk about unfortunately, like I mentioned before, the word authenticity, right? The word influence has become colored because of the way it's used in the media and kind of batted around and, you know, by, you know, marketing gurus and all that kind of thing. So it's been sort of tainted a little bit, and we've become biased in how we think about the word itself. So the thing to keep in mind is that every single one of us has influence. Every single one of us has influence. We have influence with our family. We have influence with our friends. We have influence with our colleagues at work. We have influence with our peers outside of work, right? And we're typically used to mixing with all of those people face to face. Now, aside from the pandemic, which we've all gone through.
Yeah.
In some cases, still going through in some places. That's all sort of been flipped. So we can't really operate on a face-to-face basis so much. So as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, everything is done virtually now. Well, events are becoming more virtual, right? Even big industry events have flipped to a virtual model in response to the pandemic. So everything is changing, and it's changing rather quickly. So with that in mind, think about, again, your audience, who you want to influence, and how you want to influence them. So maybe it's posting on LinkedIn. Maybe it's posting instead on an internal company blog, because some companies still have internal forums where people can post things, right, and interact. Maybe it's developing a little piece, an article, and submitting it to your PR team and saying, hey, I know there's an internal comms newsletter. You know, can I submit this to the internal comms newsletter, right? Maybe it's getting more involved with the company or your team's Slack channel, right? Because we've all been in situations where we've gone into a meeting, everybody's sitting around the table, and, you know, there's a little banter before the meeting actually begins, and then there's a little banter at the end of the meeting, right? And somebody will mention, I tried this tool. It's really working great. And everybody around the table is like, really? Wow. Hey, let me write that down. So if you think about it, your colleague has just recommended a tool that's helping them do things a little bit more quickly or making things a little bit more simple. Everybody likes that.
Yes.
So we all take note of it. We're writing it down, right? And then we go back to our desk and it's like, oh, wow. Hey, yeah, I'm going to check this out now, right? And then if you're in a cube farm like I used to work in, it'd be like, hey, Mike, hey, Shayla, I just heard about, Jane over there gave me this great tip on a tool. I'm checking it out. Looks really good. You should too, right? So they're like, really? What's the URL, right? Or whatever it is, right? So that's how it all sort of works. Now, you can do that in a more structured sense by bringing that kind of information deliberately to meetings that you attend, right? So if you attend in person, great, do it there. If you attend virtually via Zoom meetings, do it then. You know, give people tips, give people little ways that you figured out how to do things better. The problem is that most of us look at this stuff and we think, nobody'd be interested in this. I'm so weird, I'm the only one to be interested in this, right? But actually, if you share that kind of information, you'll find that other people will be like, hey, that's really interesting. I didn't think of it that way. And your colleagues all know and trust you already, so you have influence with them. So start just with a small kernel like that, and then build up from there. The next thing, if you want to build your influence beyond that, the suggestions we've already given, you've got to get your LinkedIn profile set up correctly. So have a good profile picture. Use the banner image wisely, meaning it could be just, your company logo, right, with a slogan across it, so that somebody looks at that, comes to your profile, they'll say, oh, well, Kelly works at, XYZ company. Got it. Have a nice headline too, right? And then just start posting content on LinkedIn, maybe a weekly basis. Doesn't have to be anything elaborate, just start a little bit. And then get involved in other people's conversations. That's the other key thing. So like their content, comment on their content. And I'll tell you, that is one way to build your influence on LinkedIn pretty quickly, is by commenting on other people's content. And not just something like, hey, that was a great piece, or that was nice, thanks for sharing. Say something like, hey, that was nice that you shared that. Here's another aspect of that I think is important. Boom, 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 right? Put your own thought into it. And then people will be like, wow, hey, Kelly's sharing a lot of information on LinkedIn. I'm going to go check out her profile. I'm going to follow her, right? So that's the way that all works. So I mentioned LinkedIn because LinkedIn is the premier business-to-business social media platform. A runner-up might be Twitter, but it's kind of like a distant runner-up.
Yeah. And also a bit of a circus.
Yeah, well, that's more of a circus, and I don't really like to operate there that much because of that.
Yeah. So, Tom, on that note, I want to ask you one of the questions, and I'm going to modify it a little bit. So most of the people that join me here in the Sourcing Hero, I ask them, you know, what is a sourcing hero to you? And not that you've never sourced anything, because, you know, just like we're all baby influencers at work, we're also all influencers at home. But I want to broaden the context a little bit and ask you, generally speaking, in the larger business context, about the idea of heroism. So when we think about heroes and heroism in a business context, what does that mean to you?
Okay. So do you mind if I give you an example that involves CEOs?
I would love that. Oh, yes. Oh, we love. Is there dirt?
No, I don't want
to. We love to dish about our CEOs.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll just say this. At HP, I was exposed to a number of CEOs and their styles. One CEO, two of them were women, and one of them was a man. So I'll contrast the three of them.
Sure.
So the first one was a woman, and she was very dynamic personality. Loved to be in the press, was in the press all the time. I mean, it was like she would say something and the press would want to pick it up, you know. Because she's a, like I said, a dynamic personality. She was very outspoken. I guess I would classify her as kind of an extrovert. And, you know, but the problem was just that there were two problems. One, she would do these press conferences and at industry events, she would say things. And then as the PR team, we would be like listening to what she said and be like, okay, what the hell does that mean? And how are we going to make that work? And, you know, how do you take this castle in the air that she's built in words, you know, at this conference and actually translate it into something tangible that we can communicate to our audience, right, through press releases and stories and through to, you know, talking to bloggers and influencers? How are we going to make all that work? And we know the industry analysts are going to query us about it, right? And journalists are going to be like, what the hell was that about? So, you know, the other thing was is that that person liked to walk around the campus when she visited. I worked on the Houston campus. When she visited, she always had an entourage with her. So, you know, you could see her coming down the hall, you know, like 10 people following her. And she even had somebody writing notes down on a notepad, every word she said. It was ridiculous, right? I mean, it was like, and she was very aloof. So she'd walk around sort of this prima donna, you know, and everything. All right. So the next... she left, next CEO comes in, this guy, right? So this guy, and he's a spreadsheet geek, right? This guy, I was told by one of the top executives in the company that I was friends with, you know, told me that, you know, the CEO likes to sit by the poolside and read spreadsheets in his time off. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, really? I mean, that doesn't sound like an interesting hobby to me. He's like, well, that's what he's into. He's into like looking at spreadsheets and data. And he said that spreadsheets never lie. If you dig into them enough, you'll find the truth. So, okay, fine. So, you know, his emphasis was different than the prior CEO's emphasis. It was a lot easier to work with his messaging, but he also did a couple of things to strip the company down of its culture. Things where, you know, they, as a PR person, I was asked to fly around and go to these different events and meetings and stuff all the time. And one of the perks was that the company paid for the access to the presidential lounge or whatever, the president's lounge in the airline, you know. And I can't tell you how many times, Kelly, I used that lounge, not just to go and have pretzels and a wine before a flight, but, you know, during a flight, I'd get off, check my email, and it'd be like, there's a problem. I've got to get into the, you know, I've got to get on email and I've got to, you know, be able to log in with a laptop and, you know, all those good things. Well, the president's lounge has all these booths there. You know what I'm talking about. It's like a hot desk situation, right?
I do. Exactly. Yeah. Before hoteling was even a thing.
Exactly. So you can hot desk there. You can get on, you know, you can even have a private little room, a little closet type room, close the door, and get in a meeting or something, you know, solve a problem, address a problem. So I can't tell you how many times we had to do that. Rework a press release at the last minute, whatever it happened to be. Well, he took all that away And he was like, "Well, you guys can pay for it for yourselves." It's like, "Well, wait a minute. On you're asking us to spend our time for you doing all these things. There's always a, there's very often there's some issue that comes up." So that didn't sit well. And the other thing was, is it became everything was the shareholders. Everything was the shareholders. The employees, he gave you lip service about how he's going to do this, that, and the other thing for you, but really it just made life worse. So that was him, right? Now, the last CEO is the person to me that I liked the most. And the reason why, well, let me just back up for a second. The man, he was aloof too. I mean, you really couldn't get in front of the guy, right? If you waved to him, he'd look at you like you had, three heads, you're like, who the hell is that? So anyway, the last one was another well-known woman CEO came from another company that she had really made her name at. And she came into the company and to me, she was like a breath of fresh air. She tried to rebuild the culture a bit. She was totally accessible. And I'll give you an example. We were out in Vegas. The team and I was with was out in Vegas. I'm having a dinner with a couple of them in some god awful casino mall. You know what I'm talking about? It's like
Oh, yeah.
Caesar's Palace or whatever the hell it was. And we're having some food, and she's walking by. She just walks by. No attendance, no entourage, nothing. And she's typing on an email on her iPhone or something or mobile unit, whatever it was. And we said, "Hey, how you doing?" And she just waves. She looks at us, waves, smiles, and waves back.
Like a normal person almost.
Oh, she's a real person. Yeah. So it was like, gosh, that was really, really, really just welcome. That was to me. She was sort of a hero because she was somebody I could relate to. She was a human being. She wasn't all about numbers, number one, or number two, about her ego and creating these castles in the air, like I said, of these stories. It was like we couldn't figure out one end from the other, how we're going to make it work from a communication standpoint. She was just a real down-to-earth person. And then on top of it, we had a an influencer lounge set up at that particular event. And it was for influencers to come in, mingle, have meetings, sit down. We would, bring in different spokespeople to speak to them and whatnot there at the lounge and talk to them. And she stopped by. She stopped by to say hello. And it was like the other CEOs we had tried to get to come by and spend some time wouldn't give us the time of day. She comes by and it made everybody's day inside the lounge. All the influencers were like, "Hey, this is awesome." I mean, top Fortune 100 CEO coming by to say hello and chat with us for a few minutes. We got, group pictures and stuff. I mean, of course we could, post those and do things with them. But yeah, that's the way I looked at it. A real person down to earth, just, her job as a CEO was really, had a lot more responsibility. But again, she was an employee at the company and didn't see herself any differently than anybody else.
And honestly, I mean, as much as we all hope for success, whether it happens to be in a career, in a business we own, in our journey to become some kind of influencer, I hope for all of us that we manage to maintain the qualification of continuing to be a decent, normal human being, because none of those other success factors, we talk about the ultimate vanity metric, right? If I have to give up my humanity, if I have to give up my ability to be a decent person and to be thought of as a decent person by the people around me, then no amount of success is worthwhile. So I appreciate you sharing those stories, Tom. I think it's a great contrast. I think everybody has probably known some version of those three people in their career at some level of the companies that they work in. So for people listening in, if they would like to be part of your social network, if they would like to learn more about B2B influencer marketing, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Sure. The best ways are my website, which is theinfluencemarketer.com, all one word, the influence marketer, and through LinkedIn, because I'm there every day. It's the social platform I spend the most time on. And my handle there is T as in Tom and my last name, Augenthaler.
Practicing what you preach, Tom. If you're going to tell the rest of us we have to be good stewards of our LinkedIn, engagement levels, then good to know that you are doing the same thing. Tom, thank you so much for sharing this actually very actionable advice and interesting insights around building influence in the B2B space. Thank you so much for joining me on the Sourcing Hero podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.